Hello, everybody. Welcome back into Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sutter. I'm joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSutter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. You can also follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page on our at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. And we're joining you guys here on our Wednesday afternoon. And we're going to discuss some interesting news from Monty Williams today from practice. We're going to lead off with that as far as the rotation goes. Then we're going to dive really deep into the rotation, our predictions, reassessing the rotation like we did this time last month. And I think it's going to change a lot from what we did last time, pretty much, Brent. I think for me personally, I think we were underestimating some guys.
Definitely. I actually haven't looked at it since we did that episode. So it'll be interesting to reevaluate here. And then I guess we probably can do another one of these maybe a month or so into the regular season, and we'll probably see just as much change, just to, I guess, acknowledge like how much this is in flux and how much our expectations already have changed and how much they'll continue to change because of the depth and I think just the natural flow of the season.
Yeah, we heard today at practice, this is the first meet available we've had since the Suns preseason loss against Denver Nuggets, where they lost by 6 points there. But what was your overall interesting comments from Monty Williams that stood out to us about the rotation?
Did you see my tweet of what he said about Kelly and McHale?
I actually haven't had a chance to look at it now.
Okay, so this will be the unveiling for you then. So actually really wasn't even asked about starting or any of that stuff that we all care so much about. It's really just what was Kelly's like next step? Like what can he do this year? We haven't really had a chance to talk about him or to him much because he was injured for so much of the month of October here, but kind of uninspired. No one told him directly, just to reiterate that. And Monty said about Kelly, I'll read the two quotes that were the most interesting here. First is about his game, and the second is about his role. So Kelly's not a young guy, but he's still relatively young. Those guys, as in young guys, are all looking for consistency, and he competes, he plays hard, he has a lot to his game. He can attack the basket, he can shoot it. It's about bringing consistency every night and being able to guard multiple positions. That's why he was sought after this summer, because he's such a versatile player. For him, he's been consistent. Now I'm sure he wants to be a night-in and night-out guy who complements DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker, Dario Saric, and Ricky Rubio. Being in that starting lineup at that three spot for us, that's a huge position. He's a bit of an X factor for us. If he can knock down shots and attack, he's going to guard the toughest wing for us every night. So that's all a heavy load.
Wow.
So it basically sounds like he's starting.
That pretty much, yeah. If anything else, that pretty much confirms it to us. He's not indirectly saying Kelly Oubre is my starting small forward. That pretty much says it 100% that he is.
Yeah, just to acknowledge, I mean, he listed the other four guys who we know are starting, talked about complimenting those players, and then again, like out of his own brain, came up with, you know, the comment about being in the starting lineup and taking on the toughest wing every night. You don't do all of those things, complimenting the starters, guarding the toughest wing matchup, and being in the starting lineup. Those are not three things you do if you're not in the starting lineup, so... I think we all kind of expected it. Unfortunately, I mean, we both, I think, were on the Mikal Bridges bandwagon, at least for the starting lineup specifically, as we've talked about quite a bit. But at least for now, I think it's Oubre.
Just to talk about that for a second, I mean, this is probably what we expected, to be honest, because I brought this up on the show at Live Talks to Resort Arena. But just I feel like the factor that it doesn't obviously factor in there, but just I feel like the money discrepancy, like as far as Oubre just got paid $15 million and he's a coveted piece, and Monty Williams even said in that he was coveted this summer and he loves how versatile he is. I think he actually really likes what Kelly Oubre is and what he brings to the table here. And if he can be kind of like a Robert Covington type of player, I don't know if he can or not, but if that's in his real possibilities, that's going to be a really versatile player that fits really well in that starting lineup next to those guys. Maybe that's Mikal Bridges in the second unit there. But overall, I kind of like Mikal in that second unit a little bit, because if you look at it for a second, let's assume Ty Jerome is the point guard there. You have Ty Jerome, Tyler Johnson, Mikal Bridges, and then maybe you can go Cam Johnson and Frank Kaminsky and play some small ball if you want to on some nights, or maybe put in Aaron Baines in there. That second unit is by far the best second unit they've had. Even if you insert Javon Carter in there instead of Ty Jerome, the best second unit they've had in years.
It definitely is. I mean, the good thing, as we were kind of hinting at in yesterday's show or maybe Monday, we talked about how whatever decision they make here in all these different quote-unquote battles is not permanent. So, you know, guys can step up. There will be injuries, even if they're small. There will be foul trouble on certain nights. There will be, you know, blowout types of games where different guys get a chance. So whatever we see on opening night won't necessarily, almost certainly won't be the same for the other 81 games. And that's important to acknowledge. My thing with Kelly here, just hearing Monty say that today and having followed this, obviously, since Kelly joined the team in place of Trevor Ariza all that time ago, almost a year ago now, it feels like this opportunity for Kelly, based on his struggles on the court in the preseason, his inconsistency over the course of his entire career, the prolonged contract negotiations that happened this summer, it feels like another situation where Kelly is being challenged. It's another show me type of thing. I think the contract was that way, and I think giving him the starting chance is another situation. I think the team knows what they have in Mikal Bridges now. I think he can get a lot better than what he is right now, but I think that you know what he is. You don't really know what Kelly is, and you only have 2 years to find out. This, to me, like, yes, the money plays a role, but I think the thing here is that Kelly's being challenged to live up to all of these different things that have happened for him. Show it to us on the court. You're going to defend the toughest wing. You need to space the floor. You need to have a game that complements the other starters on this team, not just one that creates stats for yourself or creates highlight plays. I don't think that's the intention of Kelly when he steps on the court, but that's been mostly what his game has been in Phoenix. So do all of those things, and you will become very successful. We will become very successful, and you'll earn your money without a doubt. But with Mikal, there's not so much of that, and I think that's really what's happening here.
You make a good point there, and I think this is obviously a big year for Kelly Oubre and a big sense as far as if he can fit in that starting lineup, because you have a pass first point guard, Ricky Rubio, there. You have a player in Devin Booker who's going to take a lot of the usage, and DeAndre, and who it seems like in preseason for sure they made an emphasis on him being a primary focal point in the offense and getting a lot of shots up. So I wonder how Kelly Oubre, who is a high volume scorer, from what we saw in the post All-Star break, where he averaged close to 20 points per game in that 12 game sample size after the All-Star break, I'm just curious to see how he functions as a legitimate third option in this and how he handles that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, all those smaller parts of his game, like the way that we've accentuated all the ways that he maybe isn't an ideal candidate to play with all of this other ball dominant talent on the starting lineup. But the way that he becomes a good fit with those guys is to focus on the smaller parts of his game that we really haven't always seen. It's to become, if not an amazing team defender right away here, to have the on-ball defense impact the game to a degree that some of the other stuff isn't so bad. And offensively, to play a complementary role where he's affecting the game without the ball in his hands. Cut, which we saw a lot of. That's one thing that we did see as far as a team dynamic that can translate here, especially with a guy like Ricky Rubio. Kelly was a great cutter at the end of last season and played off of Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton pretty well. So continue to do that, up the three-point percentage and affect the game in smaller ways. And then when he'll obviously have his moments in transition and secondary attacking situations to put up all the scoring he wants. I don't think anyone will hold him back there, but can he do all the stuff? Basically, to me, it's combining what he did in Washington with what he did at the end of last season in Phoenix, and I think that's a pretty strong player. The other thing to mention here quickly on the quotes from today, Monty was also asked about the backup point guard situation between Ty Jerome and Javon Carter. He wouldn't actually name names. He made us give out the names, and he was able to. He said then he would comment on the guys and what they bring to the table because he didn't even want to list people off who he was considering. I think we all know who that is, though. And again, he said similar to what he said pregame before the last preseason game, which is just he has a hunch, like he kind of knows what he wants to do here. He knows who has stood out, but he wants to continue to evaluate it involve the other coaches in the decision and just respect those guys who are continuing to fight the battle and not, you know, tell us we still have a week to go before the regular season. But just with how much emphasis he put on what a big decision that was, it still makes me believe that whoever is on the outside looking in of that decision might not play, period. And that to me would explain a little bit of why he's taking that so seriously. And I guess it makes sense. Like, you know, at that point, you're kind of just splitting those minutes. If you want to commit to somebody fully, then I guess you go with both or with one instead of both. I might still go with both and just kind of play the matchups a little bit, as we talked about on Monday. But what do you make of that? And I guess we can, by the end of the show, we'll kind of explain what that means. But what do you make of, I guess, just him continuing to use this time? Does it feel decided in your mind already? Do you think he's right to keep waiting? What do you think?
I think it's a legitimate battle what we've seen in preseason so far, because Javon Carter has good nights and as has Ty Jerome. But at this point in time, I mean, I think we're both in agreement here who we lean on as far as our preferred point guard option. I think it'd be Ty Jerome just because of his pass first point guard ability. And I don't think either of us expected Javon Carter to really be much of a role in this team when he first was acquired in that trade that sent D'Anthony Melton and Josh Jackson packing, along with Kyle Korver's contract that they bought out there. I really believe that at this point in time, I think it's best for the Suns to play Ty Jerome, even if it's just a smaller move on the margins, just because I believe Jerome's development is a lot more important at this point than Javon Carter's. I know that's might be tough to say, but I feel like what Jerome brings to the table is shooting and passing and a team. And I know the defense might be a little different. I know Carter kind of fills that D'Anthony Melton role that we liked last year, but I just think Jerome and what he brings is a lot more versatile in that. I think Monty Williams really values versatility, and I'm going to go with Jerome there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think so too, based on what we've seen. They've both played incredibly well, and it is tough to see those guys both play so well and have to sit one down, at least for the moment. But that's the reality. The depth also means that guys who might be playing on other teams won't hear.
Yeah, it's fun to say though, Brennan, that this is a deep rotation. There's going to be a legitimate 10-man rotation. That's the first time, I think, ever since we started doing this podcast that's actually a thing. So that's a really good thing to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's been nice to watch too, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's been fun to really watch and see how that's all played out so far, because this team for the first time in a while now has some actual depth, and I'm really curious to see how they use it. But before we go on to our next segment, we're going to dive in the next two segments on our rotation predictions, reassessing where we are about a month after we did it before. I want to tell you about our sponsor today's show, which is Manscaped. Manscaped is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, at manscaped.com. All right, Brennan, I'll toss it to you first. Let's start with the second unit, then we'll go into the starters. Where would you start as far as first, a point guard battle between Jerome and Carter? I know in the last segment there, I said Jerome, so what say you?
Yeah, no, Jerome for me as well. I think you just, as much as it would be my inclination to try as much as possible to help the defense along, I just think there's too many weak spots on the talent level of this defense that putting one individual player out there and expecting the ripple effect to turn the unit as a whole into an effective one on the defensive end is just not going to happen. It's not going to work. So as much as Ty Jerome might hurt you there, I think he also, if you want this guy around long-term, and I think he's more of a long-term answer than Javon Carter, then you just have to try. You have to let him take those lumps on defense and figure out how his game can be effective, how he can stay on the court, making a consistent impact and all those things. So it's Ty Jerome to me. But I wouldn't be surprised to see both in certain games, and I wouldn't be surprised. I think Javon would be the first guy to replace anyone who got injured on this team. You find a way to get that guy on the floor. What's funny to me, though, is talking about the second unit. When we did this a month ago, I was the guy beating the Ty Jerome won't play drum. So Tyler Johnson was the backup point guard that I had in mind, getting 22 minutes a night and exclusively a backup point guard type of role, sometimes playing with Devin Booker, sometimes playing with some of the other wings. But I think that changes now. To me, I think Tyler Johnson is the backup two here. I think him playing with Ty Jerome is a pretty nice combo, and they'll be able to kind of share those playmaking duties. But I think that'll be the backcourt you see when the starters are on the bench.
I honestly really like that, to be honest, because there's so much versatility between Jerome and Johnson. I think Johnson complements Jerome really well as far as what Jerome can't do, Johnson can, and vice versa, as far as defense and scoring and passing between all two, both those guys, and what they can bring to the table there. And I think I had like 26 minutes for Tyler Johnson back when we did it last month, but I think with how much they're emphasizing this battle between Carter and Jerome, and I think how much the backup point guard is actually going to play, I think it might be closer to 15 to 20 minutes, maybe more so than we realize in this rotation, because I think they're going to want to keep Ricky Rubio fresh this year. I that's just a guess on my part, but I think he might play around 27 to 28, 29 minutes. But overall, I really expect that backcourt with Jerome and Johnson to play well. And on some nights, we might still see Carter.
Yeah, that all checks out to me. I agree with you, especially like I was a toddler. Especially with Tyler Johnson. I think the balance there with his minutes and Rubio's minutes it's valuable to have that duo, the depth there. I don't think there's much of a trade-off. Obviously not the same player, but I don't think you're losing much to have Johnson on the court. So I had Rubio at 26 minutes when we did this before, and I had Johnson, like I said, at 22. I think that could be pretty close, and maybe you knock some minutes off of a few different players here to create this space. I don't know exactly how it works. I haven't done the like who plays which position when type of thing yet, but I think we'll see all three, and obviously Devin Booker, play at least 25 minutes each. I don't know if that math will all check out, but I think that, like you said, the emphasis they're putting on all four of those backcourt pieces, to me, and the ability to combine and mix and match them all, lends itself to pretty big minutes for all the guys. This, I think, we have to segue into the evergreen conversation of, can they and will they, I think we know they can, will they stagger Tyler Johnson and Ricky Rubio, or I guess Ricky Rubio and Devin Booker more specifically, where Rubio will be playing with that second unit and we can see more of the Tyler-Devin combo that worked so well at the end of last season. Do you still think that is in the cards here?
I believe so. I think when Monty Williams mentioned the other night at the arena about that core four, he wants at least two on the court at all times. I think Rubio is a part of that equation just because of his ball handling ability and his passing. I think he'd be a really good fit in that second unit when you can put Johnson next to Booker, even Jerome next to Booker at points. I'd be really curious to see that sometimes. But I really like what Rubio brings to the table. As you guys have heard in the last few podcasts, I've been just fawning over his passing ability, how much of a rarity it is to see nowadays in the Phoenix Suns. And it's been a very long time since he's a passing first point guard. He's really, really good at manipulating defenses. But yeah, I really like the possibilities they have on the table here at the guard position. And compared that to other years, that's a really good sight because, yeah, it's been such a weakness, and all of a sudden it's now one of the strengths of the team.
Yeah, it's nice to be having a conversation like that. I'm sure for somebody like James Jones or Devin Booker, it's a breath of fresh air after years of nothing and juggling guys who is just picking your poison. Let's move on to the wings, though. So backup wing there. Because I agree with you. I think that they will stagger those guys. I think we'll see Rubio with the backup unit. I think it'll help, you know, Mikhail Bridges, not a creator, Frank Kaminsky, not a creator. So having him there is a more of a benefit than Tyler Johnson, who I think at his core is still more of a scorer, just stylistically, you know, not really quite a pass first guy. So wing wise, though, it's just looking tough. And I said before that it sounds like they'll still do 10, but I might just say they'll do 11. So 12 would be with Javon and Ty, because 11 would include Cam Johnson here. I think that they might just do that. That's going to be my working answer here, because I can't see them sitting this guy after how impressed they've all been with him. So I have Cam and Mikhail as sort of fluctuating between the two spots. I went back and listened to what Monty Williams said when Kelly Oubre was introduced at that press conference. He talked a lot about the interchangeability of all of their wings, and, you know, Kelly potentially being able to play the four, Mikhail being able to play the two, Cam can probably play all three between the two and four. We saw Mikhail play the four against the Nuggets and Jeremy Grant there, so I think they'll all kind of mix and match here, but I definitely think that Cam has a place, and we know Mikhail does.
Yeah, as far as Cam Johnson goes with his minutes and rotation, I mean, at this point, Brennan, would you say at least 20 minutes per game? I wouldn't go any higher than that, but at least like 18 to 20 minutes per game, because his spacing and the way he shoots the ball, it's already 45% three in preseason. If he's fluctuating around 40% throughout his entire rookie season, that's a valuable piece you have to have on the court a lot. And I think probably the second half of the season, he's shooting really well and contributing really well as a team defender. I could see it getting up closer to 25 minutes per game around February, March.
I agree, and I think, you know, it's a lot of what Monty Williams has said so far has been, we talked about it a lot with DeAndre Ayton's shooting, where he has said that if you can do something and you've shown it in practice and he trusts you, then he's going to let you do it. And we, like, that to me was more a certain skills or responsibilities on the court, but at this point, like, I'm thinking of it in terms of minutes. If you show that you can handle minutes, you should get them. And I think Cam Johnson has shown that, especially relative to expectations, that he is more ready than we thought to handle that stuff. It is the preseason. I think we'll still see plenty of mistakes defensively and limitations as an athlete, but he's done everything you could have asked of him. The last one with the front court here, I think we know Aaron Baines will play, and we've talked a lot about, too, that Frank Kaminsky has carved out a role for himself, probably just individually with how many minutes he was getting, one of the best players in the entire preseason for the Suns. So I think that's pretty much, no questions asked, the backup front court, right?
Oh, most definitely. I think that front court actually showed us a little bit in the preseason that they could play well together at times. And Kaminsky showed us a lot and really surprised me, as I mentioned as well earlier this week. And I think probably surprised you too, Brent. When we saw in Charlotte, he didn't really show much of this, his passing ability and the way he can shoot the ball. It's like, he's filling that Dragan Bender role in the second unit, and he's doing everything Bender could and more. And it's a really good sight, because the upgrade from Bender to Kaminsky might not seem like much, but just having a competent player there at that four spot is huge for that second unit.
It's been a definite good sign, just with how low I was, and I think you were too, on Kaminsky heading into the year, to see him start so smoothly and integrate himself so nicely with a lot being asked of him, quite frankly, on offense. So, you know, another guy who I think will have a lot of nights where we're hanging our heads just watching the guy try to keep up defensively at that four spot. It's just going to be a lot to ask of him, but overall he's shown a lot and clearly deserves that spot. I have Twitter open, just speaking of backup units passed on this team, because you mentioned Bender. This is not a Bender comment, but I just happened to look up when a tweet of Daniel House throwing down the craziest dunk you will ever see went across my timeline, and I can't help but be sad. That guy could be on this team, and we would get to see him play, and now he gets to, it's better for him, like, you know, playing with James Harden seems pretty fun, but man, do I miss him.
Yeah, wouldn't it be fun to have Daniel House and Derrick Jones Jr. still as the backup wings?
Oh my goodness, yes, but people get mad when we dwell on the past, so yeah. I will leave it there, but go look at that Daniel House highlight and many more throughout the year. That guy got paid, he deserved it, and the Suns will move on, he will move on, but it was a fun few weeks. Before we guess the starters, or I guess you already know who we think will start based on who we thought the backups would be, but let's break that down a little bit. Before we do so, a reminder to subscribe to our show. We are everywhere. If you're on Spotify, if you're on Stitcher, if you're on who knows where you're finding our show, Bright Side of the Sun, of course. Hit the subscribe button, keep up with everything we do. And if you like the show, which I hope you do, then tell us, rate and review it. We got a couple new ones, no questions in there, so not going to answer anything, but throw a question in there if you have something, and we will do our best to answer it. The starters, to me, I think we've already identified them. It is going to be Rubio, Booker, Oubre, Šarić, and Ayton. I think we're all the favorites heading into this process, and they are the guys who emerged here. How does that fit together to you? We've seen quite a bit now. You know, we've talked a lot about Šarić. We've talked a lot about Ayton. I think we've seen not as much as we would have hoped from Booker and Rubio, but how are you feeling about that starting unit as we head into the year?
Honestly, I think it's going to be a really potent offensive unit from what we've seen so far. If Rubio can patrol the pace like we've seen, and Booker gets more of a lion's share of the usage, Ayton falls back into the second role, Oubre kind of flourishes as the glue guy, not like a Draymond Green-esque kind of player, but more so just a player who takes like 10 to 12 shots per game, and he's just really hustling all everywhere, doing the dirty work in that unit. Then Dario Šarić, if you get to unlock his passing ability, which we've seen, as you mentioned, Brennan, earlier this week that he did a lot of passing drills and a lot of pick and roll stuff and warmups. I think his passing limit might be really exposed here in Phoenix in a good way and might be blossomed here. And that's a great thing to see with Sarge because he's one of the most gifted passers for a 6'10" guy that I've seen in a while. And if he's able to do that in the starting lineup, it's going to be a top 15 offensive unit. I feel pretty confident saying that.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. It'll be, I think, you know, we haven't seen anything to make us feel worse about it than we did. And that's good because I think Sarge was, it was fair to have questions about him and he got off to a rough start. You know, I don't think he was a barn burner in the preseason by any means, but I think he rebounded nicely from a rocky start, just looked really inaccurate and kind of out of sorts offensively to start out and got back to what we had seen from him in his previous stops by the end of the four games. So that was good to see. Good to see that they're going to try to explore more from his game. I know you've talked a lot about potentially having a career, you know, assist and playmaking year from him and maybe that being a factor that leads them to maybe want to commit to him long term if he is a little better than we thought. Maybe he is. You know, I think there's an opportunity for him to show more defensively too with more of a responsibility without a guy like Joel Embiid next to him. So I think we could see more there. I hope we see more there. And I'm really excited. I mean, I talked about this throughout the preseason, but I really just want this thing to get going so we can see what they have in store with Devin Booker. Monty Williams, I asked him again just kind of how what the differences are. I guess adding layers to the scheme offensively and defensively now versus once the season starts, if he thinks that they can continue to add stuff. He basically said no, which I thought he would say. But he said, for me, it's really about Devin. He's had a number of systems, coaches, and warm-up routines. You've got to limit the package so he can get used to it. He picks up stuff quickly, he said, and they added a ton today on Wednesday, and they're excited to see what the team can do with it. So I really, you know, I don't want to like hype it up too much to take him out of context and blow it up for our audience here, but I think we will see a very different use of Booker, and that's, I mean, anyone who's watched him play has to be excited for that.
Oh, absolutely. He's one of the best scorers in the NBA already. Top five, top seven, where you want to put him. He's definitely up there. And he's a player who averaged 26.5 points per game at age 22, which is certainly impressive. But where else, as far as we know the starting unit now, what's your biggest takeaway from the starting unit overall? I know Booker's usage is going to go up a little bit, but is there anything else you like about that starting unit? We've covered Sarge a little bit. Rubio, we've hit on a little bit. I feel like the main ingredient, of course, not only to this rebuild, but to that starting unit now, is DeAndre Ayton, though. Because if Ayton needs to be on his A game most of these nights, Burn, for the Suns to be competitive.
Yeah, it's of course, going to rely on him a lot. The last thing that I would add, and it goes perfectly along with your point about Ayton, is just I think, as I mentioned with the Javon Carter kind of decision there, the Ty Jerome, Javon Carter thing is like, the defense, I just think the talent isn't there. You know, do I hope to see them improve just because of how much is riding on young players growing? Sure. But I don't think right now you should have a goal of competing, winning games on the defensive end. And if for that to change, a lot of it is going to be Ayton. And so can he do that? Will he do that? What does it look like? How does the team help him? The coaching staff as well as his teammates, all that stuff. The starting lineup is going to struggle to contain opposing offenses right away here, and how they adjust and improve over the course of the year is going to tell us a lot about the team, and Ayton's that at the core of all of it.
Before we go here, Brian, I wanted to end on this because it seems like this kind of exercise would help the audience and also really show us what the main rotation is going to be this year. But we know the starting units could be Rubio, Booker, Oubre, Saric, and Ayton, but the second unit, I had a really hard time doing it, trimming down to 10, so I'm going to go 11 deep here for the rotation here. It's going to be Jerome, Johnson, Cam, and Tyler. And then you also have Mikhail and then Kaminsky and Baines. And that's 11 players. And I feel like all six of those guys need to get minutes after what we saw in preseason. I feel like you can't cut it down to 10.
Yeah, I'm right on the same page with you. And I think that's a nice mix too. We, you know, the wings are interchangeable, the guards are interchangeable, the big men are interchangeable. You know, we know Frank can play center. We know DeAndre has talked about playing for the four. The guards, you know, there's really no difference to me with which guard is which, you know, mostly defensively, but they all have pretty good size. All these guards are over 6'4". That's a nice thing we haven't hit on. And everyone can shoot. So really the positionless thing is like, can you defend multiple positions and can you shoot? Everybody on the roster, in theory, can do both of those things. Now, can they defend all those guys at a high level? No, but they at least have the size and versatility to at least put their best hat on and try to do it. And so it'll be nice to see how they mess with everything and what the combinations can look like.
Yeah, also to add in there, I feel like on some nights, since they have the luxury of taking their development slowly, the rookies that is, I feel like some nights we're going to see Javon Carter in that backup point guard spot instead of Ty Jerome and give Jerome just a night off there just to have his development go along and just have him on a slow, steady process there, because they have the luxury of doing so with the guy Rubio.
Yeah, and they have the – I mean, they also – like, we could see the rotation shrink some nights. It could expand on others, but – you know, if it's a close game against a good team and a game they really want to win for whatever it means for the team to compete against another good team and all those kind of moments that we that are meaningful, like maybe we see Tyler Johnson just take up as that third guard 30 minutes one night if he's hot, or if the other guys aren't cutting it. Like, you know, we could see a nine-man rotation effectively on some nights, or even eight. Like this, the depth goes both ways, where they have not only a lot of decent players, they have pretty good players 1 through 8, you know, and so that's a nice position to be in as well. So I'm excited. I say it at the end of every episode, but Devin Booker said it today. He's like, I would have played opening night 2 months ago if I could have, and I think I agree.
Yeah, opening night is now a week away, and I know the listeners are probably excited to hear that. I know we're excited about that as well. It's going to be at Talkie Store Resort Arena October 23rd.
Zion in 6 days.
Zion, too. Exactly. Yeah, it's going to be a fun opening night.
Him a night early.
Him and the opening night schedule for the NBA this year is really fun, too. I know hopefully people are going to tune into, if you're listening anywhere else outside of Phoenix, to the Suns game October 23rd, because I think it's going to be a really fun matchup against the Sacramento Kings there. I think it's going to be a good test for this team and see how good they actually are this year and what kind of improvements they made. But anything else you want to cover on today's episode, Brendan?
No, it was a fun one.
Yeah, absolutely. If you guys want to go ahead and do so, follow us on Twitter at LockedOnPHXSuns. Rate and review us. Subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to. Appreciate everyone again for listening in. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow for next episode.